I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got soul. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. So you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
Wow, I made it. Welcome to the show, everybody. Good morning. My name is Brian Hammer Jackson, and you're listening to the number one radio show in the morning on a Hammer 96.7 network. Today we have a very special guest. I'm really excited to talk to her. And her name is Cheryl Kerr. That's K-E-R-R. She wrote a book called Sand People. It's a new book from Chanter Press. And Sand People is a novel for middle grade readers, ages 10 to 12, coming out from Chanter Press. You can look at Chanter Press. I have chanterpress.com. This storyline is of a 12-year-old girl, Meg. She's sent to stay with an aunt for the summer due to family changes. She solves a mystery during her stay and the ties to local history. And she learns to be part of a family resolutions. So join us. Join me. Join Miss Kerr, Cheryl Kerr, for a great interview and a conversation. Let me see. I think this is Miss Kerr. Cheryl Kerr. This is Miss Kerr. Hello, you're live on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. Uh-oh, that voice sounds like somebody I know, and I haven't paid child support yet.
Not to me.
Well, good morning to you. Let me introduce you as you come in and the audience are filling up the seats because I think this is Cheryl Kerr. Am I correct?
Yes, it is.
There you go. Well, let me give you the proper introduction. You are live on Brian the Hammer Jackson Show. Not many people survived that guest. Let's see if you can. Ladies and gentlemen, Cheryl Kerr. Look at that.
I hear that.
I'm excited. Oh, my God. You're a rock star. Mm.
Let's hope I stay that way.
Let's get to it. Tell me a little bit about you, Cheryl, because you wrote a book from the ages of 10 to 12, and that's really unusual because usually when people write a book, they're writing for the teens or they're writing for the older teens, middle age, but you specifically wrote a book for 10 to 12. Why did you do that, and how come you didn't expand it to 15 to 17-year-olds?
The audience could go higher. The reason I did that, I have two daughters, and as they were going through those years, 12 is a very pivotal age. You go from kind of being younger mindset to beginning to make your own decisions. There's a lot of change in the ages of 10 to 12 as you transition, say, from elementary school on up. So I was fortunate enough to and still am close to my daughters, but I was also fortunate enough to be friends and aware of a lot of their friends, which allowed me to watch a number of children struggle with family changes or moves or simply growing up. So the material was there. It was easy. That age is there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of angst. They always say, write what you know. As kids
right.
get older, you know them, but not as completely as you do when they're younger and parents are still a bigger part of their life. So I think it was easy to write for that age because I knew it very well.
Are you a single parent or are you both, do you have, your children have both their parents in the home?
They do have both their parents. We're not together anymore, but they did at that time. But the ages of, as you start to navigate, a good example would be a key to the house, you know, that trust and the parent no longer being home in the afternoons when the kids come home. There was a lot in those years of transition, of worry, you know, were they safe? Were they okay? Were they doing what they were supposed to do, locking the door when they got in? So a lot of little things go into that difference in role.
Sure. I mean, I don't have children of my own. I cannot possibly put myself into a place where a parent is raising a 12-year-old or 11-year-old where they're going through those stages, that awkward stages. And it's like a kid with Ritalin. You have no idea what's going on with them. And not to mention the influence on social media that you have to deal with now. You know what I mean? So I can understand all the precautions and the safety mechanisms you put in place, but you can't stop life. And if they're going on YouTube and they're going to get the – you know what I'm talking about. So how do you do that when you're raising these kids, the ages of 10 to 12, to protect them with social media and just life and movies and video games that can influence them?
I think the choices are – for a good example would be after-school programs usually quit taking children at 11. So when you're working full-time, just to give you my specific situation,
sure,
which is most relevant to me, the kids would call when they got home. I knew who they were with.
Mm-hmm.
They were required to ask permission before they went places. But I will say that I think I stayed more aware of my children's afternoon activities and mindsets than a lot of parents did. And as with most kids, as they transition, my kids had really good friends. They had really good friends who struggled sometimes with learning to be independent. But I will say that from the time they were very little, when they were, say, 6 and 4, we had a couple of people who, one mom worked at the school and she had to be at work really early. So her kids ended up coming to my house every morning for breakfast, and then we would walk down the street and she would be there, and her kids were supervised until they got to the school. We were fortunate enough to live within walking distance. And I look back on that and I just think about those quiet little things of helping out. And she was a lovely person, but her job required her to be at school by 7, and you couldn't drop the kids off that early. So I will say that it's not always an independent event. If you're lucky, like we were, I kind of have a network. Sometimes you're the helper. Sometimes you're the one that other people do something for. But that's the advent with children, is as they move into that world, I think, is to have an awareness of, and also an awareness of what they're going through. But I know with a number of my kids and other children I knew, often I wouldn't know anything was wrong till something extremely little would tip that scale and they would get upset or, you know, have an issue with something. And then I would know that something else was going on. So parents have to, they listen, but you still don't come close to knowing everything that's going on. So I would say the basic good thing there is communication. Hopefully they'll come and talk to you, but they're trying so hard to be independent, and this is all children. But this story is about, that's kind of what it's about. It's about a girl who cannot control what's going on around her, and particularly with the coronavirus and the other things going on, I thought that was a very relevant message. And to have this book be available for kids to read, because I think the identification of the emotion of the struggle and the having to move is kind of an example. It's kind of an, oh yeah, I feel that way too. And good books, books that become friends, are books that your readers can identify with. So that's not an emotion or a situation that's specific to this age group. This is just the age group I felt I could write well to express that struggle with what to do with these things that you cannot make go away, whether it's a move or in, you know, the past few months, the coronavirus and the isolation. As you change what rules children are used to, watching them adapt to that, it's not really just you anymore. It's not your situation. You have other whole little people involved or whole people involved. But I think in that regard, the book sets out something. You're watching the character. She does some things that are reactionary rather than a response, because she's hurt, and she's a good example is early in the book when she cuts her hair, and she's doing that because she's angry at her parents that she has to go away for the summer to stay with her Aunt Meg. The main character's name is Leah. But the intensity of that, I think, would be something a lot of kids would realize. Is kids learn through doing, but doing is not always the right thing. Sometimes you get in the situation and you learn, oh, you know, later. And it may be a good or bad result that comes from that. But the important part is that you either learn from it or it was okay. But the big picture in that, and there are underlying messages in this book about, you know, stop and think before you do something. It's not just a reaction. Response is thinking. Reaction is emotion. So you have to kind of change that priority. And it's never too early for a child to learn to think before they do, especially with the emotional things that are going on right now. Kids see that. They feel that. You referenced the George Floyd incident. That's very true. Everybody's aware and they're tense. So what I would say is everybody can learn from what hasn't gone right, whether you're 12 or 50.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking to Cheryl Kerr. And am I pronouncing your last name correctly? Kerr, K-E-R-R?
Yes.
All right. And the author of Sand People. It's a new book from Chanter Press. We're going to get into your book. I just want to get a little background so our listeners could know what's going on. Chanter Press, is that your publisher? Or
It's my company. Mm-hmm. I had three agents.
Good for you. Good
well,
for
they
you.
Never, but they never sold anything. So my first book, I do have two adult novels out entitled Sia and Photo Finish. Sia was sent all around. And everybody loved it, but it was too much of a niche book to be published and not quite strong enough to be literary. And so as it came back again and the galleys weren't done and we were stuck, I simply formed Chanter Press and put it out. It had been very well vetted. It was a military fiction finalist for the Indie Awards in 2010, the year it came out. So I put it out and it did well. It's gotten good reviews. And to be honest, I got this network of all these people that I've known because I've been writing quite a while. If you're really serious about it and you start with your editors and your illustrators and your beta readers, which is people who basically read your draft and help you with the corrections that the book will need, you can gain all the skills that you learn about in the publishing world, but you have to be at that same level. But Chanter Press was born that year because that book had been so well reviewed and so well liked, but it didn't go anywhere. And it was finally time to simply put it out. It's set around World War II. And then the second book did well, got a 5-star review. And then I had a break of several years as I was doing family things. And now Sand People is my next book. But Sand People is, it's written with the same idea of moving forward, overcoming difficulties, learning to deal, and moving forward. The idea of a novel can apply, again, to any age. But I think there's an especial interest for kids who are about the ages that this book is written for, the middle school group, middle grade, because those kids, often if your parents work, your brothers and sisters are older, sometimes the role models come not from words that are said to you, but from an example. And this book hopefully is an example of a main character who deals with a lot. She doesn't get to choose, but she learns to make everything work. Hopefully that example makes this book a gentle way of showing how you can be rather than somebody standing there and writing rules on a blackboard.
Well, that's fair enough because let's specify. I just want to This is not a how-to book. This is a novel. This is let me tell you a little bit about the book before we get into it because I don't want people to say, okay, it's a how-to book because I don't think it is. I don't think it should be classified as a how-to book. Do you agree, Cheryl? Do you agree?
I do agree. I think it's a showing by example. And as you'll hear people say, show, don't tell, show. Because showing gives you the real situation that people can pin a path to. That is so much more reachable and attainable than, as I said, a list on a blackboard. Academia has a distance from real life. And sure. A book like this, where you can tie it to a real person, a vignette gives you a real person, a real character that you can identify mm-hmm. with. And that, therefore, the lesson is learned in a closer mm-hmm. way that can actually touch your world.
Well, it says the storyline. Again, I'll read it. It's the storyline is about a 12-year-old girl. Now, the 12-year-old girl, is it Meg? Is Meg the 12-year-old girl?
No, Leah is the 12-year-old girl. Meg is the
Leah.
Aunt.
Leah, okay, because I didn't
Leah,
get her
L-E-A,
name.
Yes.
Leah. Okay, the story is about Leah. She's 12 years old. Meg is her aunt. And they were sent to stay with an aunt. I guess Leah is sent to stay with Meg for the summer due to family changes. Leah, I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, she solves a mystery during her stay that ties to a local history and learns to be part of a family resolutions. Okay, that's what I've read. Mystery, that takes me into a novel with moral lessons. Would that be fair? Would that be fair?
Yes.
Or coming of age. Would that be
yes,
fair?
Not really so moral. It's not that big a book because I think a lot of
right.
things people learn are about everyday skills and mm-hmm. learning to be where you are and learning to succeed with that, I think, is a very valuable gift for kids, especially with moves.
Okay.
I grew up, my dad was in the Air Force. We mm-hmm. moved fairly often from my ages of 12 to 13
mm-hmm.
till I was in college. So I basically... wherever you went, you already knew that you were going to be somewhere else. So you have to learn to be adaptable. You don't always get to pick.
Sure. You know, the title Sand People. When I hear that title, I cannot think of anything else. The only thing that I think about is people in the Middle East going over the desert with a camel. What is Sand People? Why choose that name, Sand People? Because... you're talking 10 to 12. If it was preschool, I would think sandbox. Okay, they're playing in the sand or beach. But you chose Sand People. Why did you choose that title?
Because Sand People, this is set on the coast. It's set around shipwrecks on the Texas coast, the many immigrants who came through Galveston and Indianola in the 1840s and 50s. And I'm from Texas. That's an area, again, I know. And then
sure.
any seaport town, any coast will talk about shipwrecks and ghosts and sightings and buried treasure.
Mm-hmm.
And Sand People is the way the mystery is solved that goes back to solving, because there's a town on the Texas coast called Indianola, which was wiped out twice by hurricanes. So there's nothing left of the people who came through that town. So as I was researching, we were at the Texas coast one day, and we were at one of the museums, and they were talking about current day and the sightings people, you know, and the ghost stories. And those
sure.
happen, again, in any coastal area. Sand People is the way the current day character, Leah, solves mm-hmm. a mystery from 1848. So it's on a beach, mm-hmm. and it's sand, and it's tiny figures. And she sees those, and she's curious, and she starts the research that resolves and then solves the mystery. And in it, she learns to be, because that's a funky point. Some people will tell you they believe in ghosts. Some absolutely do not. So it's a little bit of a, at first she's almost embarrassed. She's hesitant for anybody to know what she's doing. And then as she rolls forward, she moves into knowing some people who help her understand that this is more than just her sighting. This has happened in other places, and they help her with the resources, and she goes to a library and a museum, and she resolves the history, which is loosely historically accurate for Texas. Mm-hmm. It's not any specific ship or character that you would find in a list, but it's the stories of how those things are in the library and the museum in Galveston and Corpus Christi, and that would be true of any coastal town. One of the first and best comments that I got when I sent the book out to a possible editor was, this could be any beach in any country. How fantastic. I thought it was Wales, and then I thought it was Cornwall, and I thought it was Australia. So to know that I had written a story that is set accurately on the Texas coast and the timeline, but to know that these kinds of thoughts come from around the world is true. We have ships and cities and possible ghosts and people who saw. We have so much history around the world. But this is a story of a 12-year-old girl solving the mystery of one little slice that actually happened in the town and the locale where she is for the summer.
Mm.
So it makes it kind of a perseverance. She sticks with it, and she gets really curious, and then a couple of other people join her curiosity, and they end up resolving the mystery and finding the specifics that disappeared with the hurricanes that do come along and wipe things out. So it's a challenge, and you'll see on the cover it says an across time mystery because it goes from current days. The book is set in 1998, but it goes back to 1848, and she's looking backwards and resolving what that character's name was. And that's a girl that's also 12, but she was 12 in 1848 before the shipwreck. So she actually finds across 150 years. And the tie between those two is a sense of being homesick and lonely, because Leah's homesick and lonely because her parents have sent her to stay with her aunt, whom she doesn't know well. And the other girl, Greta Ingalls from 1848, is homesick in a way. She won't get to go home again either. But emotion can connect us, and that's the basis of this story, is the circumstance is very common, but the emotion is the same.
Mm-hmm.
Both girls would like to go home. So the connection is them recognizing each other across that time, that 150 years.
How important was it for you to make sure that you have the message in your book about surviving, change, and persevering? A lot of people, a lot of authors will write a great book. You already got a great tale here. I like what you're doing. I like about solving mysteries and murders and stuff like that. I love the coming of age. But it seemed like you're on a mission. It seems like you wanted to make sure that you put the message in there about surviving, change, and persevering. Am I correct here? Or was that just part of the book? Or was that a duty that you felt that you had to do when you're making this book?
No, I don't think of it as a duty. I think of it as an example. As I said before, I was fortunate to know quite a few kids quite well. And when you know them and you see the commonality of so many things for children, because adults have issues too, they're struggling. Well, that's fair.
Sure.
But that rolls down on the kids as well as just being 10 or 12 and trying to learn to be an adult. The transition between the upper end of elementary school into middle school for those kids is a huge 2 or 3 years. It's just such a transition. So I was writing about, through this story, saying, here's a character who managed to learn to deal with her aunt, which at first she doesn't because her aunt doesn't have children and they're a little prickly with each other, learning to handle her parents' own difficulties, and then also putting those things kind of to the side and making her own summer through the perseverance, through the research and the beach, and learning that in a way we're all in a family, but we're all still individuals. You have to let other people have their issues, but that doesn't necessarily stop you from your own growth. So I think it was an example for a lot of people that I've known about learning to adapt, learning to make the most of it. And when something interesting is in front of you as an possible ghost story, and that's what you decide you're interested in, she didn't just sit in the house and sulk for the summer. She actually started, made some local friends, found the local library, and began talking about this and researching and found support and was able to solve a 150-year-old mystery because of what she found. And basically, she puts all the pieces together because of her connection with this girl from 1848. And that's the fun part of things like that. There are so many stories that are about an incident of, you know, if I'd been a moment later, I wouldn't have seen this or known this person.
Sure.
It's a weaving together of facts because we all like to explain how things happen. But there's so much space when you start hearing these stories about, and I just wrote a book to explain how these things came together. But I think it's more an example of, if you're 12, whatever that situation is, how can you positively handle your own part? Because your part, again, you cannot always change the big things, a move or somebody moved away or whatever. So the thing is, how do I best be positive? How do I keep growing through something that is mine to control? Because I think that's really what it's about. It's if you're 12 and things are happening around you, how does your day stay okay? How do you handle what's in your world to the best you can?
Very good. Well, again, we're talking to the author, Cheryl Kerr, K-E-R-R, the author of Sand People. It's a new book from Chanter Press. I have a person in here who's been holding. I'm not quite sure because I don't have a buffer that let me know who's in the studio or not. So we're going to open the phones because I got a feeling they want to ask you a question. Let me see if I'm correct. 347, I'm coming to you, and you're live on the air with Brian Hammer Jackson with Cheryl Kerr. 347, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. My name's Sal. I'm calling from New Jersey.
You know what? You behave yourself, Sal. I'm in an interview. I know. Stop it. Unless
you
have
listen,
a good question.
Way, I got a little
unless
bit of a
you have a good question,
no, hold,
I have
hold,
to apologize.
Hold on. Hold it
sure.
down there, Farmer.
Sure.
Farmer Brown. Now, I usually call in the show, Cheryl, and Brian doesn't let me ask the guests any questions, so I was kind of thrown for a loop. I was doing an oil change out back, and so I came back in, and all I really heard was the shipwreck, and so I kind of didn't, I can't really comment, have a question at this point, but if Mr. Jackson would be so kind as to give me an opportunity to ask you a question before you have to skedaddle to go make an omelet or something, whatever you're doing with your day, I'd appreciate that. But, Cheryl, you sound like a lovely lady, and I'll just kind of bide my time and hope that Mr. Jackson can treat me like a real human being. Because that's why I had to call from a different number. I actually stole this number 711 from a police officer. And
okay.
So
I'm
going to throw it in the lake.
Do you want to ask her a question?
Interview.
Do you want to get... Do you want to ask?
I do want to know. Seriously, I would like to ask a question, and maybe one possibly, if it's okay, Brian, maybe one more question later. With your permission,
okay.
Sir.
Okay. Wait a minute. Let's ask Cheryl.
She's a lovely lady. She has
a great book. The book is called Sand People.
Wait. You come here.
Very serious
off, okay?
Lady.
Don't mess with her.
Cheryl, do you want to take a question from Saul? Cheryl.
Yes, I'll take a question.
It's not Saul, it's Sal. Saul, the Jewish guy in the Upper East Side cooking the book. Sal, get it straight.
Okay, Sal.
All right, now listen.
She said, don't give me sugar.
So
she said she'll take a question.
All right. Listen,
Listen,
go make yourself a Pop-Tart or something, all right, Mr. Jackson? Now listen, Ms. Kerr, is there any relation to Steve Kerr, the former Bulls, world champion and coach of the Golden State Warriors? I'm going to guess not. No relation,
no.
Right? Okay. Now, this book that you have, what's the title again, Ms. Kerr, of your new book that's out there?
Sand People.
Sand People. Now, that's fiction, correct?
Yes.
Do you write any – where do you get your inspiration for your work? And have you seen the film Gattaca? And do you ever think about doing something that's nonfiction, but based on a nonfiction situation? And what's your next project? I just kind of had to put six questions there at once because Brian's going to mute my mechanic ass in a minute. Thank you.
I think inspiration comes from incidents or people that you've met or know. This book is fiction, basically set around historical fiction of the settlement of immigrants on the Texas coast in the 1840s and 50s. So I'm already there. My next project, I have two. I have a novel called Go coming out, and then I have a picture book series about a veterinarian called Dr. Lolly Girl Vet. So I'm kind of writing in many different genres, but it really comes from people that are in your life, because again, as I said earlier, write what you know makes the best stories because you know how your characters are going to look or say or react.
Now,
can you
visualize this? I'm guessing you can visualize this as being a movie because it sounds to me like a great period piece movie. And I'm a writer too myself. I'm a hack compared to you, I'm sure. But I just want to know, is that something that you think about when you write, when you're writing or after it's done, like, hey, this would be a nice series or a movie? And then the last question before I turn it back over to Slapjack is what is Go about? what's your novel go about? Those are the questions. Would you want to adapt? Would you like your films adapted to a series? Do you have that in mind whenever you write, or is it till afterwards? And what is the next novel about? And then I'll switch it back over to the head demon master.
Well, I think when you finish a story, you write. Writers either write for themselves or they write for the story. And writing for yourself means it's your ideas and emotions and completion, but your characters have to be complete individuals and your story has to be a complete reality or world or situation. And you can't be part of it, because if you are, people don't get the full round of characters and they don't stay interested. I think this book is really good. It has been proposed that this become a series, which if you look at the cover, it says An Across Time Mystery, because people like the circumstance a lot, and I've had very good response on that possibly being a series. A movie, I don't know, because I think it depends on how, and I'll be very honest about that. We all want our stories to be extremely well received, but that writing and photography are very different mediums. You have very different ways you have to tell a story, whether it's with words or with pictures. So I cannot really tell you at this point whether the readership would be strong enough for anybody to want to turn it into a movie. And if you did, that's a like writing a play where you're actually staging it and you have to figure out, it's a whole different set of skills. But because the story is, again, if you read a book and watch a movie, they're often not the same thing, because it's so hard to tell the same exact story. I would love for that to be, but, you know, this is my debut at this level, so I'll be honest. I really want people to love this story for what it is. And then the future is, for all of us, whatever happens tomorrow happens. But
right.
It would be fun if that was, but thank you for that question. That's interesting.
Obviously, you have
quality. Thank you, Saul.
You have quality control, which is nice. So would you have to have, if they decided to make it a series or a film, you would have to
behave yourself. Thank you.
I'm overstepping my boundaries. All right, what's cool about?
Yes, her interview. Good question, Saul.
What's go about?
All right, listen. Okay, my interview, but thank you very much. I like your questions.
I'm
going to
put a sock in my mouth.
Okay.
Bye.
thank you, Saul.
Thank you.
I like
we'll
your
talk
questions.
Later.
Oh, no. Don't open that door. Thank you, Cheryl. Cheryl, going back to your book, again, the name of the book is called San People. It's a new book from Chanter Press. I like your storyline. Is this your first book, Cheryl, or you would like to continue this as many other books concerning this character and with Meg?
No, I think this is, as with many things, maybe. I don't know that I see Aunt Meg as the continuation. Leah could be, but what I really see for a series is probably similar stories and situations, maybe with castles or other countries, because one comment I've gotten is this quote could be a beach anywhere. So because it could be a beach anywhere, there are going to be similar stories, similar resolutions in any country. That's interesting. So to me, it might be a similar situation, but I don't know. That is probably not, with Leah being 12 and Meg being her aunt just for the summer, those aren't really, Leah is a main character. Her aunt is secondary.
Right.
Her aunt is part of the mm-hmm. scene, but the development is Leah's, that story. But that doesn't mean there can't be other stories. And yes, I've been asked about that. Somebody that read it said this, I definitely see this. And that's why, as I started thinking about it, I said An Across Time Mystery, because I think this is very relevant and very possible, because there are similar events, again, all around the world. The comment, this could be a beach anywhere, a story from anywhere, means that people around the world will probably want to read it. And that's the fun part, because it ties Europe coming to Texas and the immigration. It opens the door for, because the comment came actually from Europe about this could be a beach anywhere. So, and then I was surprised it was set in Texas. So having been to Europe a couple of times, It's always interesting when I say I'm from Texas, how excited people get, because Texas has kind of its own mystique. That Texas has a coast is not usually part of that mystique. People usually want to know about Longhorn cattle and the show Dallas from the 70s and 80s, you know, big houses and windmills and oil and all that. So to have written a book on the Texas coast, which is, again, a bit of the state that's not so popularly known, kind of brings it in too, because that curiosity people have about the state is probably going to mean this book is picked up. There haven't been a lot of books about the European settlement of Texas through the Gulf. As I researched it and I looked, a funny little slice. So that's kind of fun. But the idea of a, you know, if you think back to Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, the idea of teen detectives is not in, it's been, or you have the Enid Blyton stories, the five books from England. There are lots of stories that follow this idea, this character level and age. So I'd love to be on in that group. I think that's a very, that's a group where kids are really seeing what can I be. You know, it's a role model thing. What can I do?
Right. And you do have the possibilities of, I know you did it for 10 to 12, but the possibilities of 13 to 17, solving little mysteries in between, coming of age story, it can go for a lot of books and a lot of novels. You hit home, you're spot on. And I want to thank you for coming in. Oh, you are. Is the book now on Amazon, or is it just strictly through your publishing company?
No, it will be, it's an ebook, so it will be on Amazon and every platform where you can buy it. It will be on Kindle. And then we've added a print on demand because with the stay-at-home shelters right now, it's really not possible to hit bookstores and do readings and signings, which would be the next step.
Right.
So print on demand, you can walk into your store and pick the book up and buy it, because a lot of people still like to have a, quote, real book in their hands, the paper version.
Right.
But a lot of other people are in ebook. So in attempting to make it available to people, I did that combination. So you'll be able to, there will be buttons on the Chandra Press website. You can order it. My other two books are on Amazon. You'll be able to order this book. It will have its own ISBN and a barcode, but you'll be able to find it on any platform, e-reading platform, and the book will be adjustable. It's called Flowable, so it will be able to be on any reading platform. But that's the best way I knew how to make it available, because again, with the when the coronavirus quarantine hit in March, then everybody, if you look at the internet, there are many comments about what should I read, what's new, and all these kids are at home. And I thought, well, this is a good time to get this book out, because it is a good example of what you do with cannot control.
Right.
It's not the same situation, but and it's an interesting read. It's a summer book, which a lot of kids are home in the summer too. So that, but again, the situation, the availability of time to really focus on books right now, and this book being a positive, hopefully a positive story about a 12-year-old who handles all these different things and does a good job at it, and it being an interesting story, hopefully that will be exactly right for this time frame, because kids are struggling right now, and with parents working at home.
Sure.
I think a good story that kind of helps you know how to be and what to do for yourself is a positive read for kids. And I do like for my characters to grow through things that are in front of them, which is typical for a novel. But what you really want is for your characters to grow in some way between, you want people to like your character, but you want them to identify with them too. And that's a different thing. So when they finish this book, hopefully they say, wow, this girl managed. She ended her strain with her parents. She learned to be in this coastal community for the summer. And through her own perseverance, even though she was a little embarrassed at the idea of believing in a ghost at first, she worked through that, and guess what? It was real. So through that example, you give kids hopefully something to say, oh, wow, I can do my own thing and perhaps do it well.
Well, I think you did a really good job, Cheryl. And, again, the name of the book is called Stand People. And, Cheryl, we're at the end of our interview. This is usually where I give you 30 seconds to just comment or say something that we haven't touched upon on maybe the talking points and let people know how to reach you and how to buy the book, so on and so forth. So if you would like to do the 30 seconds, then it's all yours, Cheryl. Whatever you want to let people know and how to reach you and about the book, if some things we did not go over, please say it now. And thank you, Cheryl.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm Cheryl Kerr. I wrote Sand People, which is available from Chandra Press. The publishing date is June 27th of this year. I'd love it if you bought a copy. And the website is being redesigned. I would love for you to leave comments at chandrapress.com, where I'm developing a blog. Either print on demand through any bookstore you attend or any ebook platform is where you can reach the book. I loved writing it. I enjoy the bits and pieces of so many young people that I've gotten to watch grow into wonderful adults. Good comments on the book, which will be on the back cover, are from readers as of now. Superb writing. That is a very poignant story. And again, as I've said before, it could be a beach anywhere. So I hope people all over the world will buy it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Cheryl. And your contact, how on your social media contacts, Facebook, Twitter, how people can reach you?
I'm on Facebook as Cheryl Kempf, K-E-M-P-F. Chandra Press also has its own Facebook page. I encourage you to write me there. My email is ckwords, W-O-R-D-S, the number one, at gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
And the phone number for the press is 512-467-8305.
Cheryl, you've been pretty damn good there, Cheryl. Spot on. Good. There you
That's
go,
wonderful.
Ladies and gentlemen. Cheryl Kerr, everybody. Thank you, Cheryl, and good luck. Much success.
Thank you. Thank you for
Thank
the
you.
Opportunity.
You're welcome, Cheryl. Now, Cheryl Kerr, the name of the book is called Sand People. It's a new book from Chandra Press.